What is the name of the area here?
Rosslea.
Rosslea area, yeah.
Rosslea, and I'm talking to Harold and Esther Andrews.
That's right.
And you're farming here.
Yeah.
And how many generations of your people were farming?
It'll be the sixth generation. I think I'd be the sixth generation of Andrews. My cousin actually traced where Andrews came across sometime in the early 1800s from Scotland. And that there's been Andrews in this particular townland or in this area for this last, as I say, five generation, sixth generation. My son will be the sixth generation of Andrews living here.
How close is your land to the border?
To the border? Well, as the crow flies, it'd be approximately about a half a mile, three quarters of a mile, roughly.
Okay, so
north, to give you an example, basically, if you look at the map, Rosslea, where we are living here, is in a wee corner. Northeast of where we are here is County Monaghan. And even south here is County Monaghan as well. We're sort of in a wee corner here in Fermanagh.
Okay, and so the Republic would be in both sides of you then?
That's right. East and south is the Republic, yeah.
So tell me, are you from what tradition? Presbyterian or Church of Ireland or...?
Or both, Church of Ireland.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and where did you come then from, Esther?
I was born in County Cavan, up beside Coot Hill in County Cavan.
And what's your maiden name?
Richie. I was Esther Richie.
And do you mind me asking, did you also come from a farming background?
Yes.
And how did you meet?
We met at a concert. The clergyman in our parish, his wife, got a concert or got us into doing sketches, and we came down to the hall at Clachy, or where we go to church now, and that's where I met him.
And so what year was that?
1969, wasn't it? Yeah, or 70. Yeah, we got married in 1974, so...
Yeah, so you're here,
I'm a hero
with Harold for that length.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So... you both lived here then on the farm right through the Troubles.
That's right. Until
That's right,
came here, I had a first cousin of my father's who was a policeman, was killed up in the Lisburn area in the early part of the Troubles. I think he was nearly the first policeman murdered that put a bomb under his car, and he was killed.
And who was he now?
He was by the name of Rolson, and his mother was a sister of my granny's.
Oh, okay.
And he was actually, his father was a member of the guard, the Shia Kona. He was born and reared in Sligo, and then the whole family moved up here after his father died, naturally. Mother and... the family moved up to Northern Ireland.
And as well as farming then, Harold, were you also a member of the force? You didn't join any organisation, so...
Well,
not security organisation.
The only force I was in was when I became 17, 18 years of age, I joined the B Specials, and I remained in the B Specials up till they were disbanded in 1971-72. I didn't join the UDR. Well, at that particular time, I was travelling quite a lot up seeing Esther before we were married, and I was advised to be extremely careful travelling backwards and forwards. In fact, at one particular time, a senior member of the RUC came to me and told me that I was on a provisional IRA death list because of my travelling backwards and forwards from Fermanagh into County Cavan. But it was purely going to see my wife-to-be at the time. I wasn't involved in anything sinister, in other words.
And so farming down here then, how difficult was it for you? What threats? What can you talk me through the years?
Basically, my local church, which is Clough Parish Church, is Church of Ireland Church, and the local hall, it's actually the church. You can actually stand in the graveyard and throw a stone into the Republic of Ireland. It's on the very, very border. Half the parishioners are actually from County Monaghan that belongs to the church. But at that particular time, during the troubles and that sort of thing, social life was nearly non-existent, because basically when you did your work in the evenings, you basically went come into the house, you locked the door, sort of thing, and there was very little social life or very little functions. You attended very few functions because there was practically no functions because of the troubles. There was quite a lot of IRA activity round the border area, up around Rosslea here at that particular time. In fact, they placed a bomb in the local parish hall that I go to, and put explosive at the local transformer. There were several incidents whereby people were afraid to go out at night. Basically, that was it. Social life was nearly non-existent.
Was there a bomb literally placed outside here?
The first thing that after I came here was the local shopkeeper in Rosslea. He was Douglas Daring. And obviously you get to know the shopkeeper quite quickly after you come here. And he was shot in his shop because he was the last Protestant person owning a business in Rosslea. My first sort of coming in contact with somebody that I knew, got to know very well, that was more there. And he wasn't a member of the security forces just because of what he was. And then later on, is it 18, 20 years ago, they planted an 850-pound bomb under a culvert in the road there just in front of our house. And Seamus McElwain and Sean Lynch were across there in the field waiting to put it off, and then the army came across them. Now, that bomb down there, I don't know, they must have put it there during the night, but I went down with our three children, as did Mrs. Edgerton up the lane with hers, and the bus stopped on the exact place that the bomb was underneath the road, and we put our children on there, and there were children coming on the bus too there, and with the way with the bombs, they could go off at any time, and the bus could have been blew to smithereens, and that had a bad effect on all of us, because when you thought of what could have happened, then the morning that they were there to put it off, Harold had went out to look at a cow that was going to calve, and he came back in here and he just got into bed when the shooting started, and it echoed in our sheds, and you would have thought World War III had started. Then he crept down the hall to the phone to ring in to the police to see what was wrong, and they just said for us to not go outside, stay away from all the windows and doors. And I got the three children out of bed, and they still remember it to this day, with their duvet, and put them in the hall there where there was no windows or doors. And that we were in here for hours until it settled down, and then the police came and we had to be evacuated out until they got the bomb dealt with. So that was something that you never forget for the rest of your life.
Why was the bomb put there
It would have been put there when an army patrol or whatever would have went the road, they would have then put it off up in the field. And
The provisional IRA, they had on previous occasions actually put in explosive just up the road, a short distance from here, half mile up the road. They planted a bomb in a culvert under the road, and put it off and killed two policemen actually,
yeah,
that were coming off duty. And I mean, it was a common type of system that they had of putting explosive in culverts, setting it off for security forces. Mainly it was meant for security forces, but of course, unfortunately, as did happen, an elderly lady and her daughter were waiting on a school bus further up the road here, about a mile and a half up the road, and there was a cattle trailer parked at the end of the road, and the IRA was lying in wait, waiting on an army patrol, an army jeep or an army Land Rover, or police Land Rover to come along, and they're going to put the bomb off. Actually, an army patrol did come along and they put it off, and this elderly lady and her daughter were down at the end of the road, standing beside the trailer. Little did they know that there was an explosive in the trailer. They put off the explosive in the trailer. They missed the police or the army. Actually, jeep had just went past and missed it, and they killed the lady's daughter and badly injured her. So she had shrapnel, I think, in her body to the day she died. Actually,
what was her name?
She was Mrs. Sylvia Crow. Crow was the lady that was killed.
And the daughter,
Sylvia
Crow.
My goodness. And tell me now, the two men that you spoke about in your field,
yeah,
that were setting off the bombs,
yeah,
Lynch, what was his name? Lynch?
Sean Lynch.
Sean Lynch, he's an MLA, actually, yeah. He's an
Seamus
office.
McElwain was the other guy. He was shot in it, but Lynch was... I stood at the kitchen, in the kitchen there, and I seen the army carrying Lynch, and well, I didn't know who he was at that time, but that's who it was then, and putting him on the helicopter and taking him away.
He only got wounded. The SASDC had discovered the bomb about 3 or 4 days, and I was aware that there was something up 3 or 4 days because the police and them had mentioned that there was something going on, they say. But actually, McElwain and Lynch there came in, they say, to put the bomb off that particular Saturday morning, 26th of April 1986, the morning, a date I'll not forget for a while.
My goodness, yeah. Tell me, the man that was shot and killed out there, did you attend? Did you go out to him?
No.
What happened to him?
We weren't allowed out of the house. The police and the army were. There were loads of them about in helicopters and whatnot. So we were told to stay indoors, and that's what we did until the police came and escorted us out to the up the lane.
How frightening was that? How shocking was that?
Well, it's worse afterwards, because at the time it's happening, it's just shock. You never think of... All these other things went on, but you never think of it getting so close to you. And
there, just literally.
Just a couple of fields.
Yeah.
And that they were... The thing, too, when you thought about it, was they obviously had to put in an awful lot of time putting that bomb in down there. They couldn't do it in the daytime when or the neighbours would see them. So they obviously were there at it at night, and it obviously would have taken them a right while, I presume, to several nights.
And so that bomb remained there then for how long?
Well, I don't know how long.
But it was there when the bus of children were
over it. Oh, it would have been, yeah, it had been there.
It.
And
it
had been
Police actually found it on the Thursday evening. They didn't tell me that they'd found it. Actually, they called me and asked me, did I find anything suspicious or anything moving about here? I said no. And then Saturday morning, then they heard the shooting then. So that was there. It was there for those 2 or 3 days anyway. That was when my wife was saying there, she went down to the road basically beside the culvert with the children in the morning, the Thursday morning and the Friday morning.
The bombs that they put down on several occasions, they went off prematurely and they killed people. You know, a bomb's a bomb, and sure, it could go off at any time.
Yes. And in all those years, was your house, you know, being a farmer here and on the border, you must have been in... Did people come here to you at all?
Not very often. My parents would come down on a Sunday in the afternoon or something like that, but they worried about us too because... Mm. And then a couple of days after it, the Northern Ireland office arrived up in a big car and wanted to move us out, move us away from here altogether.
Why?
Because they said they couldn't, that more than likely that Sinn Féin IRA would presume that we knew, that we maybe had seen the bomb or seen the wire or seen something, and that it would have been us that got the police, that they found it and then were there to get them.
Oh, as informers, that you would have been telling.
In fact, a senior policeman came and asked us, would we not consider moving further in up the north, you see, away from the border. So I said those five generation of Anders had were here, and says, I'm not leaving here. The only way I'd be leaving here is in a box to me. Graveyard up at Clough Church, that's the only time I'll be moving out of here, so I don't intend to move.
So I suppose it isn't easy then, because you can't do a thing without every time you wake up in the morning you're thinking, what's going to happen
every
next?
Every time we went out or went to go in the car, you had to check underneath the car, you had to check the tractors. You had, that was just a daily routine from then on.
Did you keep a gun in the house?
There was a gun, yes, a legally held shotgun that belonged to my father, who was given by a retired clergyman, actually. It's a very old gun indeed.
It was more of a museum piece than something you'd use.
And so your children then, I mean, were they affected? Did it leave lasting effects on them in any way?
I don't know about lasting effects, but it always affected them. And I mean, they knew, they were in.
I see a picture of them.
Yeah,
they're adult children.
Oh yeah, they are. Now. Yeah, and there's grandchildren. So, but you know, in school, they had friends whose fathers were murdered. Like they would have been able to say about the time Winston Ho was blown up down the road a wee bit. There, the clergyman here, Reverend Kill at the time, he had to go to the school. That man's wife worked as a cook in the school, and his two sons were at the school. And he had to go and tell her that her husband was after being blown up on them, that their father had been killed. And the same happened then. There was a John McVitie was murdered out near Lackey Bridge out there. And his son was on the tractor with him, mowing rushes at the time that they came in and shot him dead on the tractor. And his wife cooked in the school, and his son and two daughters were at the school with them as well. So they were getting it always. And the day that what annoyed me, I was an Irish citizen when I came here because I was born down there. But when Douglas Dearing was shot and when John McVitie was shot, the guards didn't come to the other side of the border where the murderers were for, I think it was 6 or 8 hours after the incident. And, I mean, it was widely known around here that, you know, Charlie Haughey was in power at the time, that he didn't want them to catch them. And what I did then was I rescinded my Irish citizenship and I became a British citizen because my father was born in the time when Ireland was all one under Britain. So that enabled me to become a British citizen. So I just did that because I was so furious that the country that I had come from, they were doing nothing to stop the people who were killing my neighbours and friends here.
I mean, it's common. It was common knowledge that Seamus McIlwain that was shot here by here at the back of my own house. He was responsible for, according to the local surgeon, and I mean, it's common knowledge, he was responsible for about 13 or 14 murders right round the border here during the trouble. So he was actually arrested after the bomb went off here, killing the two policemen that I was telling you up the road here, about a half a mile. He was arrested and he was put into prison, and he was one of the escapees. And then when he escaped, then he was back to his old ways. And it was after that he was here, actually, and was shot dead here, actually, by the security forces in 1986. I just don't remember now exactly when he was arrested.
I don't mind the date.
Number of years prior to that.
But when you think that he was killed on your land?
On our land specifically. It was the next neighbour's land. But he would have been... When they put the bomb down there, they put the wire up the telephone pole because they had to cross our lane. So they put it up the pole, across the wire and down the pole in the far field, the other side of the lane, right around that hedge and right back round to here to where they were shot. So this is why that it took them several nights or maybe a week to do all this.
Yeah, to plan that and to wire it up.
Yeah, wire
the explosive
it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. About 200 metres roughly of command wire to where they were coming
in. And in all that time you noticed nothing?
Like no.
Nobody?
No, never noticed anything.
But you see, we would have come in at night and you closed the blinds and you watched a bit of television or whatever and you went to bed and you wouldn't be out. You wouldn't go out. You'd be outside the door for anything.
Was that fear?
Well, to a certain extent.
Mm.
There was nothing really socially for you to go to because it was non-existent for those years.
Yeah.
So apart from going to church of a Sunday and for me going to visit my parents or whatever during the day, I wouldn't dare go at night.
Yeah.
It's
an amazing story. It really is an amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find now that the council chairman, Sinn Féin sympathiser, he can't even condemn something like that. He talks about Seamus McIlwain being someone who nearly brought about the peace process. And one of the members of the Enniskillen bomb asked him to condemn it, and he wouldn't condemn the Enniskillen bomb either.
I see. So... When the prisoners were released at the Good Friday Agreement time, did that allow you to see them coming out again?
Well, certainly did. We voted no to the agreement because it was ridiculous.
When people are convicted of a serious crime and then only having to serve a maximum of 2 years, and with the release of the prisoners that time with the Good Friday Agreement, it certainly didn't go down well with the unionist people, the people who suffered, basically had relatives killed and that during the Troubles and that. It really annoyed them, there's no doubt about it.
Do you march on the 12th of July?
And I do, yeah.
He's an Orange man, I'm an Orange woman, and our three sons are in the Orange Order as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
the Orange Order, going to meetings of the Orange Order, which couldn't take place in this area without pre-arrangement with the police to come and guard us while we were in the hall having our meeting. We had arranged the meetings so that there could be protection while you'd be in the meetings. And... you know, people denigrate the Orange Order wrongly. Every organisation has a few people that you'd rather weren't in it. But it was something that kept our community together. And you met, and everybody that was there were in the same situation as you were. Because everybody was... You did look out... Protestant neighbours around here looked out for each other, and if they seen something, if some car was sitting down the road there and was sitting there for a while, well, some one of the neighbours might ring and say, well, there's a car down there, have you seen it, or whatever. Yeah.
The local clergyman, Church of Ireland clergyman that was responsible for the local church that we went to, he had a great influence among the Unionist Protestant people in this area. He always maintained that the Protestant people, he used to have meetings, and we would discuss the circumstances under which the Protestant people, the Unionist people, Church of Ireland people, and Presbyterians and Methodists had to live. And he always maintained, under no circumstances should the Protestant people retaliate. He says, it's against God's law for to take a life. It's wrong, he says, for the Sinn Féin IRA to be modern people. I condemn it wholeheartedly, but he says one mother to kill in response to their killing, he says, gets you nowhere, he says. And that was one thing that was very noticeable here in Fermanagh, was there was practically no retaliation against ordinary Roman Catholic people. Maybe you suspected them being involved supporting the IRA or that sort of thing. There was very, very little retaliation against the local Catholic people.
Mm.
You had your suspicion that they might be supporters of it and that sort of thing, but at the same time, he had a great influence that way for good, I mean. And yeah. I think it certainly helped local people. I mean, he used to have meetings and Bible class, and he would discuss these things about how people should face up to the circumstances.
And other, you know, say the community around you here, which would be predominantly Protestant community.
Predominantly Catholic.
Oh, is there a lot of Catholics living?
Only about 17% now. There's about 1,800 roughly. Actually, the Protestant number would be about 1,800 roughly on the electoral register. And at that particular time, there'd be only about, there wouldn't be 20% Protestant in this area.
Yeah.
In the Rosslea area.
How do you get on now with your neighbours? Do you get on well with Catholic?
You pass the hand with them, but there's always that, you never trusted them.
A mistrust still there?
Yeah.
And it's
you haven't got over that awfulness of what happened around here. I mean, there were farmers. McIlwain's was put out of their place. Their house was burned and they had to leave.
Why?
Because there were Protestants living out on the border, way out the other side of Rosslea, and they were the only Protestant family in that area. So the house was set on fire and they had to leave.
When was that?
I don't know the dates,
okay.
But it's a long time ago, way
in
back.
In the early 70s it would have been.
Yeah.
The same happened with a Holden family up at Clark Church, beside the church where we go. There was confirmation up in the church, and there was a couple of policemen that members of their family were going to be confirmed.
Mm.
And they had with the way the roads were closed off, there wasn't many routes up to the church. So a bomb was put onto the road that they would have been travelling to church on that particular Sunday. And a wire led from the bomb across this Holden man, who was a Protestant man's field, out up into the state. And he happened to be out through the field, and he seen where they had been digging down. He investigated, and he seen a wire. He reported what he saw to the police in Rosslea. They contacted the guards the other side, and the bomb was defused or whatever before the confirmation took place. But two or three nights after, three or four gunmen arrived to Holden's house, went in and shot round it, and could tell them that the guards had told them that Alfie had told them about the command wire across the field. So that was more, you see, they talk about collusion, but there was more collusion between the guards round the border and Sinn Féin IRA than there was of anything else. Because that's a specific thing that happened. And the same with whenever John McVitie was shot, the guards wouldn't come out.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm of the firm belief that there was collusion between the guards and the IRA. So, I would never like to have to, that my children would have to, or grandchildren would have to go through what we went through in those 20 years.
Yes, and your mistrust is there because of all of this. Yeah,
I don't think it will ever go away. Like, I speak to my Catholic neighbours and that, but it's always that wee thing there that...
Yeah.
Well, like, I was brought up and went to a Roman Catholic school, and when I lived in the South, and my friends, when I was a youngster, were all Roman Catholic, because there was only maybe two families of Protestants in the whole area around where I lived, and it was so different when you come up here. You wouldn't have thought it was the same people, but maybe they were coerced into doing some of the things they had to do. I don't know, but
it's never
talked about. So,
has anybody ever come and spoke to you about your personal story?
No, never. Never in my time.
And this is the first time?
It's the first time, yeah. And I'm glad somebody is doing it, because, you know, it's there. It probably needs to be told. And people need to know what happened. People tend to think it's all one-sided, or, you know, maybe that in other areas they complain about the police. I don't know. Maybe some of the police did do wrong. I don't know whether they did or not. That it never did wrong by me.
Thank you very much for telling me your story. I appreciate very much Esther and Harold. Thank you too.